Hi, this is Kevin Conroy, and you're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
You are now on the inside of what I like to call the Circle of Trust. We are all connected in the great circle of life.
You know something, Bert?
What?
I think you and I are going in circles.
It feels like we're going in circles.
Circle is now complete. When I left you, I was but the learner. Now I am the master.
Because it's a circle.
Yeah, we heard about the circle.
Yes, we're familiar with shapes.
Hi, this is Greg.
This is Chuck.
And this is Dan, and we are Talking in Circles, brought to you by the Geekcast Radio Network, the podcast that bleeds and maybe cries, as today we'll be talking about the infamous Batman v Superman, the movie people just can't get enough of or already walked out of, I guess. It depends on your viewpoint there. But before we get to Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, League Forever, how's the week been going for you guys?
Was that going to turn into a Star Wars crawler on the front of that?
Dawn of Justice v long time ago, galaxy far, far away. Zack Snyder doesn't know how to do Superman.
It fits with the theme of trying to cram everything in the smallest space possible.
True. That's true.
My week's been going pretty well. I went to the comic book store this past weekend and had quite the interesting situation happen around me. I did not put myself into it, very thankfully, because it was kind of crazy. Just looking at the new comics, and then in through the door walks somebody with music blaring at 50 billion decibels.
Oh, that's awesome. That's always appreciated. Yeah.
And, he had his hat on backwards, and he had this big poofy ponytail coming out the peak of the hat in the back.
This is sounding like my hero, so.
Oh, he is a total hero. He walks in, and then what you would think was his mother tells him, shh.
How old was this person?
Around 26, so a little bit younger than us. And the woman that was with him was, I found out later, their ages were 26 and 52. And the supposed mother tells him, shh. And he turns around and goes, don't you tell me to shh. And then he says, hi to Dave, the owner. And then all of a sudden they go back into the little toy area, and all you hear is a little bit of like an argument going on. You know it's like something contested, but you're not really getting the whole conversation. But you're hearing her go, shh, a lot to him. He's already shut up and turned off his music, thankfully.
That's good.
At this point. But you just hear something going on back there, and I'm kind of like, the cop's going to have to get called to the comic book store. But she finally, like, she's walking out the other door, the whole store away from him, going, I'm going outside to make a phone call. And so she goes outside. So then we're just left with him. Comes over kind of next to me in the middle of the new comic section, looks around for maybe 2-3 seconds, and then asks Dave, the owner, oh, do you have this? Putting no effort into looking for himself, Dave then has to get up from where he's sitting, almost halfway across the store, and goes, grabs what he wants, essentially right where he was looking.
To be fair, they are organized alphabetically, so it could be difficult to figure that out.
And then he gives the comic to the guy and then proceeds to walk back to his desk. And the guy goes, oh, do you have number 2 as well? And so Dave has to turn back around, grab him number 2 off the shelf, and give it to him.
He's going to beat number 2 out of him.
And so finally Dave is checking this guy out, and he finally leaves. And then I'm over in the graphic novel section.
Did he pay for the stuff?
For it. He checked him out and paid for it. Then I was over hanging out at the graphic novel section, which is across the store. And then, like, I'm spending about 5-6 minutes over there. And then I go check myself out with Dave, and we're talking, we're having a nice conversation. And then in the midst of our conversation, in walks the mother.
Nice.
She shows her phone to Dave and goes to him mid-conversation, like she totally interrupts our conversation, goes, why would you write this to him? And Dave, I'm like, what the hell's going on? Why is this lady confronting Dave? What did Dave write? Because Dave is one of the nicest people ever. And he's like, if you scroll back up, you could see that we were talking about Justice League. I didn't write anything about him. It was about the Justice League. And she goes, oh, turns around, walks out. And I turn to Dave and I go, what the hell was that? He goes, yeah, those two are... She's like, you heard the argument before, right? I'm like, yeah, I heard that, uh-huh. And he's like, yeah, she's 26, she's 52, and they've been dating for a while. And it's like, okay. So I'm like, okay. And they're like, he's like, yeah, they fight a lot. She apparently had suicidal tendencies. He's got drug issues, so they're quite the pair.
Gave him his phone number?
Like I have to assume it was like through Facebook or something like that, because okay. I would at least hope. But yeah. As we kind of left that conversation, I was leaving and I said goodbye to Dave. I was like, I'll see you next week. And Dave, please take care of yourself. Please take it. He's like, thanks. And then later I was going to pick my mother up at the mall, which isn't that far away from the comic book store. It's about 5 blocks altogether walking. And it's the city of Scranton, so they're not huge blocks. I see them again walking down the street, and they're arguing. Do you think I'm an idiot? And they're screaming at each other walking down the street. So that was a fun comic book experience. I totally went to the comic book store at the wrong time.
Wow. They sound like lovely people. So.
Oh, they looked like lovely people.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. Chuck, I think it's going with you.
Pretty good. Nothing really too exciting happened, to be honest. I think I was telling you guys earlier that I did make a interesting Amazon purchase. I bought a DC Omnibus, my first DC one. I have a few Marvel ones, but it's an old story a lot of you guys probably know called DC 1 Million. This Omnibus, I'm not even kidding, it's like 3 inches thick.
Nice.
It's really going to take me forever to read. It's like 1,200 pages. But I never read that story when it came out or anything, and especially all the little tie-ins that this includes and everything, yeah. So pretty excited for that, to read that, even though it'll probably take me like 12 weeks to read it.
We read it while driving just to try to finish it, you know?
Right. It was funny, like, I saw the box on my porch when I got home, and I picked it up, and I was like, holy shit, this is heavy. it's like 10 pounds. Pretty crazy, but
yeah. It's hopefully you have strong shelves, man. Those can add up.
Yeah, they definitely can. That's my first DC one. I have a few Marvel ones, but I'm really liking the omnibus style, like, because they actually end up giving you a lot of extras and stuff too in it. Like at the end, they give you like original sketch work, and they give you like little bonus features, like a lot of times with, you know, how they created the book and like interviews with the creators and stuff. There's usually some pretty cool stuff in there, and they do like variant covers they put in there, and you have like really nice like thick cardstock paper that's like nice and glossy, like really top quality stuff, and sewn binding and everything like that. So really good quality stuff.
Nice. So yeah, my week is going pretty. Yeah, it's uneventful. We did have Easter this past when recording this. 2 days after that, and with my son's first Easter. Didn't do anything too extravagant because he's one. Not even one yet. So he loves stacking cups, so we got him cool stacking cups. He loves building them up and knocking them down. He's like a little baby Godzilla. besides that, not much else. Made some freaking... I'm a big fan of ham and scalloped potatoes, so we did have some great food for Easter. But now we're home in Scranton for the week, so looking forward to that. So we're actually recording one of our rare live and in-person episodes, which is always fun to do. But besides that, it's not much going on except for this awful weather we have right now. It's like we're living inside of a Zack Snyder movie.
It actually calmed a little bit.
dark, dreary, and rainy, and windy.
And confusing.
Yeah.
And not very motivated.
No. But with that, what we're going to do right now, because there's a lot to get into with Batman v Superman. Some good things, possibly. Some bad things. What we're going to do is take a quick break. We're going to come back with some general thoughts, and then we also will certainly get into some of those nifty-difty spoilers. So we'll see you in a bit.
Kid?
Yes?
Shut up.
Beyond the Night is the GCRN's latest review podcast. We are covering everything in the Knight Rider television universe. From the classic 80s TV series to the 1991 reunion film, Team Knight Rider, and the 2008 relaunch series as well. So join TFG and Mike and Dion the Music Man as they go in-depth and Beyond the Night only on Geekcast Radio Network. You can find Beyond the Night in iTunes and on www.geekcastradio.com.
Kit?
Yes, Michael?
Just keep driving.
All right, and welcome back. So yes, today we are going to be discussing Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice League America 2016. Anyways, so let's just kind of just, you know, clear the air. See, just get some general impressions or maybe what you were hoping for going into it. And as you left the theater, you know, what you felt in those instant moments. Greg, just walking out. Feelings, general thoughts regarding Batman v Superman. Do you enjoy it? Did you hate it?
I think to pretty much sum it up, I kept asking Chuck, I think over and over again, to an irritating point, I'm like, what the hell was that? What was that? It jumped around a little bit too much. It was all over the place. I didn't understand motivations by some of the characters. There were logic leaps. There were scenes that could have been deleted, but I guess on the good notes, the good takeaways, I guess, Ben Affleck, I thought was better than I thought he was going to be. I loved Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman. I can't wait to see that movie. I'm not going to be happy with a Batman or Superman or any other movie, I don't think, but we'll wait and see. I thought her theme music was really good. The music was really good, but it felt very misplaced a lot of the time. But yeah, that was just my general overall feelings right there. It was a mess for me. I even went on Twitter after I got home from watching it with Chuck. I'm like, I'm going to go on Twitter and see what other people are saying, what other, like, oh, this was terrible, that was terrible. But I went on Twitter, and there were a lot of great reviews for it. A lot of people were sticking up for it and saying it was an awesome movie, that it was so great. That just blew my mind.
Yeah, we can get to that, because the reaction to this movie has been interesting. The reaction to the reaction has been kind of interesting. But Chuck, thoughts on Batman v Superman?
Do I have to?
I guess you don't have to.
It'd be a short podcast, but...
Let me start by saying I did not have very high expectations for it at all. I know, like, whenever the first trailer came out, way back when, pretty much as soon as I saw that, I knew it was going to be something that I wouldn't really be on board with. Knowing how Man of Steel went, knowing how Zack Snyder irritates me to no end... but I mean, I was excited for Affleck as Batman. Actually, I was kind of anxious to see how he would do and everything, and I really didn't have too much of a problem with him. I don't think he did that bad of a job. I was very, very disappointed overall when I walked out of the movie, though. Like, I kind of felt like someone robbed me in an alley and took a $10 bill off of me and I'm never gonna get it back. But I guess, like, the first half of the movie, I kind of felt like I was on an acid trip. Like, I mean, the weird, like, freaky dream sequences and stuff, yeah. Like, I mean, that's fine if you throw that in now and then, but they didn't really serve a purpose to me, and, like, it was very, very odd, and the one I even found completely infuriating is the... reveal it to be a dream inside of a dream, and that really pissed me off. But
I think I know which one you're talking about, which I wonder if it is a dream or not. Well, I guess we can see. I think I know the one that you're talking about. I think we can.
Yeah, but they never like went back to it and explained anything.
They didn't explain anything.
Well, that was I was gonna say that was my other problem with the movie. They really didn't explain things.
I'm sorry. They did explain Batman's origin again for the 50 millionth time because we needed to hear that again because we don't all know that.
That was a waste of 7 minutes. Like I don't know why.
The difference though is that apparently bats gave him superpowers and the ability to fly. Out of the Batcave. That moment, I'm like, that's when...
That was the first WTF moment. I leaned over to Greg, and I'm like, fuck is this? Are we in the right movie? they just did a horrible job to me. Like, obviously, we're comic fans. We know how things should go. We know the basic story that they're basing this off of. The 9 stories they're basing this off of. But
only 9?
But, like, they made huge jumps to people, like, you know, that aren't familiar with these characters as extensively as we are or as comic fans are. Like, they made huge jumps. They didn't explain things. A lot of things are... It's just assumed that you know that, oh, yeah, Wonder Woman has a magical sword that... can cut through things that other things can't. You know, like, you're just supposed to know that, apparently, without any explanation.
And is immortal. But, yeah.
Right.
So, or close to immortal, yes. Mm.
But yeah, I mean, we can get into some other stuff. But those are my general reactions. So.
Going into this, I don't know. I guess I was probably more hopeful than you guys. The trailers... Was it the second or third one that gave away everything I loathed?
I think it was the second one.
The second one, yeah. That one I felt like was just... And you could even, I think, spoil a lot of the more surprising moments in this, good or bad. But, you know, Zack Snyder is a director. There's stuff about him I like. Like, I like Dawn of the Dead. I do like 300. I'm mixed feelings towards Watchmen. I think there's stuff there to enjoy. But overall, I think he was mishandled. And Man of Steel, which we didn't talk about, I think we've talked about previously on the podcast, I had issues with, but I think overall landed more on the positive than the negative side. So I thought, okay, with this, does seem like they're trying to do a lot, but I have some hopes that it can turn out and be okay. Initial reaction I heard, it was all the fans tweeting, saying how great it was. That's when I got worried, because I'm like, once you see a company trying to send out fan reaction at the premiere before critics, that's usually a red flag. That's what they did with Fantastic Four. And so that's when I'm like, oh no, that's not good. All the reviews came out. It was pretty lambasted by the critics. But I'm thinking, okay, maybe is it as bad as people say? It is a pretty big lightning rod. And I don't think it's void of... there's some positives there. I think there are some things that it can build upon. I wouldn't say that they need to scrap everything and start over again and rethink what they're doing with this universe. I do think they need to get Zack Snyder away from pretty much anyone that's not Batman, because he feels like he treats every character like Batman. Though I did like Wonder Woman. We can get into that more. Walking out, I think the words that you guys used was really good. It was mass. It is a gigantic mass. And just... There is a lot of talk how there's a 3-hour cut, a 4-hour cut, even like a 5-hour cut of this movie, which is not...
It needs to be an hour cut.
Well, I can see how... It does feel like a movie that was hacked to death, because even on the editing standpoint, like, there were very little establishing shots from scene to scene. Yeah. Like, suddenly we're with Lex Luthor, now we're with Clark Kent and Lois Lane, then we're, like... It just went from... It was like someone was changing the channels without even anything in between. It was like they were trying to... It was like they were trying to find space wherever they could, and I think Zack Snyder, I think visually, he has a good eye. He reminds me a lot of Michael Bay in the sense of, like, you know, he comes from the world of music videos. He can make things look pretty. He can take images, and he can take what we've seen on the comic book page and make it represented on the big screen. But the issue is he's so fixated on things looking cool that he puts that above of doing the work to make those images actually matter. Like, yeah, that looks like from Dark Knight Returns, but it has none of the same emotional resonance. It has none of the same the motivations like we mentioned. So I was disappointed in the sense that I thought it was overall a failure of a film. Not a complete failure, but it does feel like a movie that's trying to do too much. Not because it's cramming in all these different characters, but it just seems like
It has too many concepts and ideas as well as characters, and it's just too much of in every element that it's a film could use.
Yeah, it's a movie of big ideas, but none of those ideas are really represented. Like Zack Snyder needs to realize, just because characters say things aloud doesn't mean that makes your movie about that. Yeah, Lex Luthor loves talking about Greek mythology, and you like people talking about like the role of you have character like the role of Superman and his representation and like what his role is as like this godlike being, but the movie never becomes anything like that. It's just the reasoning behind the Batman v Superman is so lacking. It's it's kind of telling, because before going into this, my wife's like, I don't understand, why would Batman be fighting Superman? And the thing is the movie doesn't really answer that question very well. So I think that's
asked that a lot by layman people that aren't into comic books as well. Why are these people fighting? And I tried to sum it up for them in like, well, in comic books, usually it's, the characters didn't know each other that well. They would very rarely run into other comic book characters. And so it would be instantly assumed, oh, here's another costume person. They're a bad guy, and they would fight, or they would be set up in a situation where it looked like they were doing something bad, but somebody else was mistaken. But in this movie, I don't really understand what each other's beef was with each other. Like, they didn't set that up enough for me.
Yeah.
Personally, I didn't know why Lex Luthor wanted both of them to fight. I had no clue, other than ominous music playing when he walked down a hallway, which, great music, did not fit the setup for him being bad yet.
No.
But yeah, there's a lot of characters where it was like, okay, why is Batman ticked at Superman?
See, I kind of understood Batman in the sense of, yeah, those apocalyptic visions were kind of strange, but to me it seems like his fear was that, or Superman wasn't that symbol of hope, that he's seen all, pretty much everyone around him fail and like basically abuse power. So his assumption is that that's what Superman can do. I think he's scared of the capabilities of Superman. Why he went to the extent that he did, that is not completely clear.
And it's weird that Batman would make such an assumption, because Batman is a man of hard facts. He wasn't very detective-like through this whole thing. I believe, what was that one quote, Chuck? I know you're good at the 1%. If there's 1%...
Well, if there's even a 1% chance that he could destroy all of humanity, we have to take it as an absolute certainty. And like, that's a huge leap in logic. Yeah. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Especially for Batman, who's a diehard detective in the books, but here he isn't. And also, he's gun-toting, which...
He was gun-toting in the 1989 one, too. Though this one more so. And seems like he was way too eager to kill. A little more than I like, but...
Yeah. Well, to go back to your point about the things sort of being touched on briefly, like it reminded me a lot of like when you go into your college course the first day of class and they give you the syllabus and you kind of go over your major topics for the course for that semester.
Mm-hmm.
They don't go in depth in any one topic. They touch on something and then they go to the next one. So it's like it's these huge ideas, these huge brain-busting ideas, like, yeah, we're going to get into this. And then you talk about it for a minute, and then you go to the next brain-busting idea, and it's like, okay, we're going to talk about this thing too. But it never goes in-depth about any of them. It just jumps to the next big thing, and it just feels like that, like a whole semester crammed into one sheet of paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it just gave me that impression so much. Like, it was very rushed, and things crammed in, nothing was fleshed out, and...
Yeah, it was very rushed, but then they also had things that took up time that we necessarily didn't need. Like we mentioned, the Batman origin, we didn't need that. They went over Lois Lane trying to give this mysterious bullet to this senator, and she does it twice. Once in a bathroom, once outside. Why did we need both of those scenes left in there?
There's a lot of unnecessary scenes in the middle there. I remember we were talking, like... Even the one Perry White scene was kind of like pointless.
Like yeah,
looking for Clark all the time. Yeah. He's a reporter. He's going to be off places trying to get reports done. I don't understand why he's looking for him all the time.
Regarding Clark Kent too, and that like, I think nothing the biggest symbol of the movie's failure, the biggest issue with the movie, I think, is the character of Superman. And Zack Snyder, I think, just doesn't understand that character in any way, shape, or form, which I know Chuck, you probably touch upon more so than I can, but we're talking about, like, why Batman wanted to go against Superman. I can, like I said, I can somewhat understand it, or at least felt they attempted to provide an explanation there. How well that was done, or if it was logical, that's questionable. But with Superman, not to give spoilers away, but why he fights Batman is another issue. But his initial problems with Batman is, like, because he's a vigilante, but Superman in himself is committing very eerily similar actions. He's doing nearly the same thing. You know, with the whole African scene, to me, is problematic in a number of different ways, where it seems like he is consumed with saving Lois Lane, but so, I don't know, he has no caring about anything else, like the after effect of his actions, or, like, there's, like, it's like, if you could save her, why didn't you save the other guy? I don't know. It just seems like Superman as a whole, he's lifeless in this, he has no conviction. I don't know what he stands for.
Hope. It says it right on his chest.
Well, there's actually a thing where he says, when he points to his chest and he says, this doesn't mean anything anymore. I'm like, you're right, because it doesn't. So, I don't know.
It never did.
Yeah.
Because you chose it not to mean anything anymore. And that, well, that's a good point, too, because I was thinking, really, like, this movie, when we first heard about it coming out, it already had a huge advantage to it. And that advantage is this intriguing idea of exploring the opposing philosophies of these two great characters. Mm-hmm. You have two, like, titans of DC Comics that do things very differently in their own respects. So you have this idea of kind of pushing those two philosophies together and exploring the contrast between them. So that was a huge advantage they had to work with. And I think they even failed at that because, I mean, throughout the entire movie, the two characters behave remarkably similar, like you touched on.
Yeah.
And, like, I even looked at it the other way, but Batman accusing him of these things, and he's being extremely hypocritical. He's branding people with bat symbols, and he's destroying all sorts of things when he's doing chase scenes, and he's got huge guns mounted on his Batwing and on his Batmobile and everything. And so I'm like, he's being extremely hypocritical as well. So I felt like that whole concept was just pulled right out from under them. They couldn't even explore those contrasting philosophies because the two characters are so much like each other. And it's like, that's fine if that's what you're going for in the movie, but that's not what you were advertising. Like, you're advertising Batman versus Superman, Boy Scout versus Dark Knight, and you didn't do that. You made them the same.
Yeah.
So it's like, pick one or the other. Don't, like, you know, don't be conflicting in what you're trying to do.
That moment when, like, when you're finally seeing these people face, it should feel inevitable in the sense where you're at a crossroads that you can no longer go back to. Like, they got to a point where this has to happen, and it doesn't feel that way for either of them. Yeah, so Superman's kind of forced into it, but even Batman, it's like, why he finally gets to that point that he does, it doesn't seem legitimate. And going into the character of Batman, kind of like the moment that, like, it seems the public starts to go against him because of actions that occur. Like, it doesn't seem like why. I didn't understand, if anything, that should kind of shift public opinion any other way. Or, like, I don't see why Batman would see that as the point of no return. And it, I don't know. It even the fight itself, the Batman v Superman fight, I thought it was really
boring. It was very slow. I agree with you, Dan.
Like, the action in general, I felt like some of it was, some of the stuff with Doomsday was okay.
And Batman fighting in the warehouse.
Yeah. But that Batman, it just seemed like a lot of throwing and a lot of punching.
And a lot of dragging.
And there wasn't, like the thing I kept thinking about was, like, the Flash Arrow fight from that TV show, and I felt that was at least more creative of what was doing than anything in that fight. Like, there's some things Batman did, but overall, it was just, there was no, Last week we were talking about Young Justice, and Chuck brought up like how they would be more tactical with their abilities and kind of go about the action in an interesting way. With this, it's just like, I'm going to punch you, and you're going to punch me, and that's the and extent of it.
Throw you through stuff.
Yeah, and it's not like Avengers where you first see these characters going up against each other, and you get this like swelling moment where you're like so emotional because finally you get to see these two characters come together on the big screen. Like you saw Iron Man and Cap come together. That was a fantastic moment for me. Even when I replay those, the first Avengers movie, I still get my like little lift in my chest just to see them on screen together. But these two, it didn't do anything for me. I got no emotional rise from them. And then to see them fight so pitifully back and forth.
That's a good point too. Like if you compare it to say Civil War that's coming out in a month or so, and like kind of goes back to my previous point, like you're giving the fans like a clear option, like a preconceived notion, like going into the movie, either you're with Team Cap or you're with Team Iron Man, and depending on how things play out in the movie, you could be reassured in your opinion, or you could switch sides if you see things differently. I feel like people were robbed of that in Batman vs. Superman because the two characters became so similar. So it's like, it's good comparing it to Marvel movies like that. I mean, it just shows how much different it is. Like,
I think ultimately a big reason for that is because I think what Marvel movies, you can probably, they're not perfect. There's issues you can certainly pick out from each film, but I think what they've been really great at doing, and I think they've made a point, is they are very protective of their characters and making sure that what they feel their characters are represented on screen in the best ways possible. And the sense of, after I leave a Thor movie, even if I don't know Thor going in afterwards, I understand Thor. I get his ideas, his motivation, his philosophy, who he is as a person. I don't feel like I understand that with anyone in this movie. So, like, I don't have, like, that attachment to these characters, even though I'm a Batman fan, I enjoy Superman, Wonder Woman, on the superficial level, seeing them come together should be great, but since I don't know who these characters are specifically, that moment just seems, it doesn't have any gravitas to it. It doesn't, like, I remember seeing Avengers coming together, and it's, maybe it's unfair to compare them, but it's hard not to when that you have that spinning shot, and it felt like the movie did its work to make that moment matter, and it made it like seem like this is like you want to cheer, and people literally cheered when we did that spinning shot of all of the Avengers together, and it was just, it felt like, okay, this is what I want to see. With this, when all three came together, it was like they don't know each other, they're just like, oh, so we're this is happening, so how's yeah. it did not have the same effect, and That kind of was, I think, a lost on it. The dawning of the Justice was really just, an afternoon snooze, I guess.
Well, it also hurt it in that scene because no one really knew where Wonder Woman came from either. Like, she's just appearing in random scenes intermittently throughout the movie, and they never really gave any explanation of, like, where she's coming from.
She should have had the origin story, not Batman.
Yeah. Exactly, and like they should have like brought her along more so leading up to that moment, so that it would have a bigger impact. But I felt like it just kind of fell flat because you have these two guys that just wanted to. One guy wanted to kill the other one, and suddenly doesn't now. And then you have this girl that nobody knows. It's just like it was just a moment that fell totally flat. Like it was.
See, I guess I was okay with the treatment of Wonder Woman. I think they could have maybe gone more into it, but I really like Gal Gadot in that role. I thought, and I did like the chemistry between her and Ben Affleck. And I thought the photo that they showed was at least enough to understand that there's more to her than she leads on. So I didn't have as big of an issue with her per se. I mean, it could have been done better. Like I agree, but I thought it does have me. I will say I am super excited for the Wonder Woman movie because there were little touches here and there that I thought were great, like seeing she gets like punched in the face and then she gets up and like she smirks and like wipes the blood away from her mouth or something like that. She does feel like I'm excited to see what Gal Gadot can do as Wonder Woman. I do think that she can be a great character. And it's funny when I was there's that photo you see him, like, that guy looks a lot like Chris Pine.
I thought the same thing. I was like, wow, that is uncanny. And I'm like, oh, you're an idiot. It is Chris Pine.
But yeah, so that's true. Were there any, I know we talked a lot of negatives, were there any positives that you took out of this, that anything you thought, okay, I did enjoy that aspect of it?
Amy Adams in the bathtub. But then they disappointed me again by CGI-ing a lot of stuff. That was a very risque scene. I have no idea why it took place in the bathroom other than just to see her almost naked. That's the only reason. Ben Affleck, I thought, was better than he was going to be.
What did you think of regarding Ben Affleck? Like, his overall look, the costume, the Batmobile, like, all that.
The Batmobile looked pretty cool, but it was tough because it only came out at night, yeah. So it was tough to see all of its features, but it had a cool shape to it and everything. The suit, I don't know, he seemed kind of bulky to me, a little bit too bulky.
Yeah.
I don't know, but other than, I know they're trying to go for the Frank Miller version, and he's a lot more bulky in that, but...
What about the voice?
I didn't mind that, but it did sound a little, like we said before in an earlier episode, that it is a bit weird when he's going, when he's saying, oh, I thought you brought her, or something. Yeah. When he's being serious, it works, but if he's trying to be humorous or something like that, which didn't happen often, but...
There's not much humor in this movie at all.
No, I think... Mrs. Kent had the only humorous line.
I don't know if I remember the cape. It.
Yeah. I'm your friend's son. Oh, I could tell because of the cape.
Yeah.
I did find a couple of positive things. And like you said before, Dan, that there was a lot of great potential. Like the ideas, the concepts that they were trying to explore, but never got to. Like something that really intrigued me was like sort of what they were trying to explore with Batman of how an obsessed mind, when it continues down that path so fiercely, becomes sort of a fractured mind. And I would have liked to seen them explore that a little bit more, because it looked like they were trying to show you that he's kind of being consumed by this irrational fear he has, and he's just getting obsessed, and he's training, he's staying up all hours of studying and everything. And
thank God we had an 80s montage for that.
Right, exactly. Because, yeah, you can... Oh, that was ridiculous, too. Let's train really hard like Rocky for 2 weeks to fight Superman.
Gotta have a montage!
He's trying to pull the tire, and Superman's pulling the whole truck.
Yeah. Our ship.
Yeah. But I know, like... Yeah, the ship with the big anchor chain.
Which was... sideways, so I'm like, you can't just... All right.
Yeah. I did like that theme with sort of the fracturing of the obsessed mind. I thought that was kind of cool and everything, but they should have, you know, kind of seen it out a little bit more. But I'm trying to think of what else was...
That Batmobile, cool. Where the going back in, how it went back into
the
Batcave
underneath the water, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, because it doesn't take place at the Wayne Manor. It takes place like Wayne Manor is a burnt husk or whatever, and we're in some ultra modern thing by a lake.
Yeah, like a guest house or something like that.
Yeah,
I actually thought it might surprise you, but I actually thought Superman's character wasn't as disappointing in this for me as it was in Man of Steel. I found more fault in this one with other characters, which I could mention later, trying to avoid the spoilers, but I didn't have a huge problem with Superman. The scene with his dad could have been good, but weird. it was a little confusing. I know what they were going for and everything, but yeah, that's, I don't know, that's about it. I don't know of any more really positive things I took away from it.
Clark Kent's parents are really okay with him killing people. It just seems like they're like the worst parents ever.
And you were talking about before how there's no hope left.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, that starts with his parents. Like,
yeah.
If they had stuck more to the Kent family from the comics, or even from some other like shows and stuff that we've seen, like that's where Superman's upbringing comes from. Like, yeah. Not from Krypton, not his Kryptonian values. That's from the Kents. That stuff comes from the Kents.
Yeah.
And when you have a mother saying, like, you don't owe this world anything. You don't have to do anything for them. And you have a father saying, like, yeah, you should have let all the kids in the school bus die. That's why he's the way he is. And it's not appealing. I don't understand the draw to this by Snyder. But
not to get more on Superman, but I think part of my issue with Superman is that he's a character that, in this and Man of Steel, he listens, he doesn't say anything. Like, I can't even tell you, giving you a major characteristic of Henry Cavill in the role. Like, I've seen Henry Cavill in other things, and Man vs. Uncle, where he's very charismatic, charming. I think he could, like, even be, like, a great James Bond, because I think he is British. But in this, he just... I feel like he's gotten nothing to do. Like, I feel like we'd never get a scene with him where we understand what he thinks being Superman means. I understood why that didn't happen in Man of Steel, because he's becoming this character, but... Yeah, we see a montage of, like, what the world sees him as, but I never saw what Superman thinks Superman means.
He thinks it means getting into the tub fully clothed with Lois Lane.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I do think him and Amy Adams have good chemistry. I do like Amy Adams a lot in the role, though some things she did are questionable. Like, why would you throw that in the water for no apparent reason and then almost drown? All right, whatever.
There were a lot of questionable things like that.
Yeah.
But, like, why would Batman put a tracer if he knows exactly where they're going and going to chase after them anyway?
Yeah, yeah. Or why would he put a tracer and then attack them? And why not attack the ship before it hits land, where you have more of an advantage because you have a plane? But that's whatever. but that, like...
Where it's going to end up with Lex Luthor anyway, so yeah. Just go to the Lex Luthor warehouse.
I did like most, like I said, everything revolving around Superman. We haven't talked about him at all, but a little bit, which was Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor. I feel like it's unfair to blame Jesse Eisenberg for what he was, because I think it's really a script issue. And I saw people saying, oh, Bryan Cranston should have been in the role, but...
That would have been awesome.
I think he would have been a great Lex Luthor, but the thing is, if he's saying those same lines, I don't know how you behave any differently than what the way Jesse Eisenberg was behaving. How do you say the Redcoats are coming and not seem like a crazy person? I think someone said it feels like the Lex Luthor and Joker were supposed to be in the same movie, mm-hmm. and they just combined them into one character. I think that, like, he's almost like more Mad Hatter or the Riddler-ish. I thought, like, he was effective at doing what the... Snyder wanted him to do. I just don't know. I get people who like Lex Luthor and think this isn't Lex Luthor, because it really isn't. He's this leader of this mogul, this CEO. He's so obviously insane. Who's going to trust him with anything? Yeah. I guess like who's going to give them these like government secrets when it's like this guy clearly is off his rocker, even around people and normally.
I understand where some people are coming from, where they say they liked his character in this. And, yeah, he made a good villain. He was... He had a good character, but the character was not Lex Luthor.
No.
I mean, it was a good villain, but it wasn't Lex Luthor. That's my issue with it. Like, if you're going to change the tone of something that much, then why not just use a different character? Like, there's a difference between... people having different takes on a character. Like, if you think about, you know, Jack Nicholson, Heath Ledger, and all the people that have played the Joker over the years, like, they all have different takes on it, but it's always still the Joker. And you recognize it and you know immediately who it is. But when you're changing it this much, it just makes no sense. Like, why didn't you just pick a different character?
Greg, like you mentioned, I still don't understand what his goal was, what his motivations were. And again, that's not... the performance issue, that's a script problem or an editing problem. And I would be, I know there's supposed to be like a 3-hour cut, and I actually am somewhat looking forward to seeing that cut, because I feel like another 30 minutes could fix a lot of this movie's problems, or another hour, or like Greg said, maybe less of an hour where you just have a Batman movie. Like, if you just cut out everything and made this just a Batman movie, you probably would end up with a much better film. But anything else in general before we get into more of the spoilers and specifics?
I just want to talk about you mentioned the script a little bit before, and David Goyer was actually the writer on this.
Yeah.
And it kind of surprised me, because he's written some pretty good stuff, and he happened to write a lot of things that I like. And, you know, obviously I think everybody knows I'm a huge Blade fan and everything. He worked on all of those movies. But I felt like even this, like, I could see sort of Snyder's influence on, you know, maybe he was sort of handcuffing Goyer with, like, the script, if you know what I mean. Like, yeah. He kind of was, like, tying his hands, like, limiting him on what he could do because Snyder wanted things a certain way. Like, I feel like Goyer could write a really good script for something like this, but I feel like he was kind of held back by what Snyder wanted to see, and it's a shame because, like I said, I really enjoy a lot of David Goyer's stuff, but this, you know, I kind of hope he doesn't catch too much slack for this because I don't know entirely if it's his fault, but...
He's also, there's another writer too, and I apologize, it escapes me, but he's worked with Affleck in the past and Argo, which... And I honestly wonder, too, if it is a script issue or with a movie like this, it does seem like there are a lot of different cooks in the kitchen, as I say, maybe too many cooks and too many people wanting to do too many different things. And the point where you start with Man of Steel 2, then you add in Batman, make a Batman v Superman, then you add in Lex Luthor, and then you end up having this, like, hodgepodge of different people wanting different things, and then it's, you can't do any of it. You try to do all of it, so you do none of it. And it shows you just how important editing is. And I think that could be this movie's major flaw, is just in the editing bay, getting chopped to heck. Or it could be a script problem where they weren't able to figure out, I don't know. The problems are many, I guess. And I guess it's hard to pick just one person to say this person. But I guess at the end of the day, you kind of put it on Snyder, because a lot of the issues... with this, I see issues, similar issues with this other film, so it's kind of like why I feel like he might be the main reason the movie didn't succeed like it could have.
Also, Goyer worked on the entire Dark Knight trilogy, which is surprising too, because that was some of the best writing I've seen. But this is like, I just don't get it. Like, it's totally opposite of that. But...
that could also explain why they can get Batman okay, but they can't do Superman.
Yeah.
So, do you have any other thoughts, general thoughts, Greg?
No, not really. No, sorry.
Okay.
All right. Besides spoiler stuff, but
all right. Anything else, Chuck?
I guess. Well, I'll save it for the spoiler stuff because I think it probably would make a little bit more sense there. But like I said, my piece about Jesse Eisenberg, so that's fine. But I'll talk a little bit about Doomsday later when we explore that.
Though. Okay. Yeah. So, spoiler warning, from now on, we are going to get into specifics, so there's no more complaining. If you've not watched the movie, go back, watch it. Well, maybe wait for DVD and Blu-ray, and then come back and finish this. But we're going to get into specifics. And then, let's start with Doomsday. What were your thoughts on, I know it was already kind of spoiled in the trailers, but what did you want to say regarding that character?
It was kind of strange that they... like, I made reference before, they're, like, using 9 stories to combine in this movie. Like, obviously, Dark Knight Returns, now you're bringing in Death of Superman, all these things. But I realized that they couldn't do the actual origin story of Doomsday because it was probably, it would probably be too confusing for most people to try to explain that. I don't have a problem with that. I'm on board with the fact that they just made it, you know, Zod's body from the first one. It makes a lot of sense. It's a good move there.
So. I don't... That I agree. I think that makes...
But what my problem is with it is, like, it seems like they didn't give enough of an explanation of what was happening. Like, they were alluding to certain things, like, you know, you have the computer on the Kryptonian ship saying that this is an ancient Kryptonian procedure and it's been outlawed by... the Kryptonian Council and everything. Yeah. And they never say why. They never explore those things. Like, why was this an ancient practice? For what purpose did they want to create this monster? Why was it banned? You know, why would you make reference to these things if you aren't going to flesh them out more?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just, it didn't make any sense. It was just like, the explanation was like, he was born to kill you. This is your doomsday. Like, what? Like, that's not an explanation. That's not an introduction to me. It's just like a it's just like a poor sort of vehicle to introduce your final boss. And it was just, it was really, really disappointing because, again, I was kind of like disoriented. I'm like, okay, what? Where did this monster come from? What the hell is this?
They kept saying it was some kind of defect, but I'm like, what's the defect? The fact that they Lex Luthor put some of his blood on his face?
Like, yeah, like...
That super advanced computer can't figure out, oh, somebody just put blood on this guy's face that isn't his.
Right, it's like... And they were, that's what I mean. They're hinting at it. They're like introducing foreign DNA or organic matter or whatever. But it just seemed like a fake way of doing. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
A kind of like an old '90s cartoon where they just gloss over this explanation to get to the fight quicker. I don't know.
I question because I feel a lot of this, and you see, we talked about it with the Wayne Manor being kind of destroyed, and it seems like a lot of stuff will be filled in later in like. Other movies, maybe I've heard rumors that like this Kryptonian ship is maybe beginning a Brainiac later down the line or something like that. So if that's kind of the idea is that they're going to fill in those gaps in more in films down the line, would that, I don't know, fix that issue for you? Would that make you enjoy this movie a little more if it's they're purposely holding back for future movies, or is that problematic in the sense where by doing that, you're kind of ruining this movie now just to plant seeds for the future?
Yeah, I think so. I think the latter, because you're leaving the audience befuddled. Like, the only reason I was able to realize, or anyone was able to realize who this character was, is if you're kind of familiar with Doomsday even a little bit. If you know Doomsday is the guy that killed Superman in the comics, like, you're like, okay, he made a reference to Doomsday, this must be Doomsday. But, like, for the average people out there, it's just this insane monster that was a resurrection of Zod. Like, that's what people would think. And to me, they could have gave a better explanation that they were already hinting at, but then flesh out. Like, if you're saying this is an ancient Kryptonian procedure that creates this monster, like, well, what purpose did it have? Like, was this sort of, like, their... destroyer armor like on Asgard that Odin has? Was this their last resort of protection against invading empires or something like that? Like, that would have been cool to have sort of an explanation like that, and then say, yeah, we're gonna unleash this thing. But he really didn't touch on anything. Like, Lex apparently learns all this knowledge of 100,000 worlds, it said, and they didn't share any of it. Like, it's just, they didn't...
Just teach me. Oh, next scene.
Yeah.
Right.
I definitely see what you're saying. I didn't have as much a problem with that in the sense of, it does seem like at the end of the day, it's just like, I'm trying to create the super weapon and then there's not much more. I was okay that they didn't maybe go more into that ritual. I think the general audience maybe be able to get just the bits of the fact that this is this former Zod now kind of trying to, like a Frankenstein's monster type of situation, and not go beyond that. But I agree that it could have been much more effective if you kind of had that background knowledge and knew exactly what is the purpose of this character, where it's coming from, and how it just kind of appears. And I do think that the line of him learning all those worlds, I'm guessing that's where he finds out about Darkseid, because it seems like he's aware of Darkseid by the end of the movie, and what he's saying to Batman, and I don't know if that means he always knew about him, or he found out because of this computer.
He dreamt about it.
Yeah, I don't know. Did you guys happen to see the deleted scene that popped up online?
No. Actually, was it an apology?
It was Zack Snyder just sobbing and weeping.
Well, there's a clip of, it was Henry Cavill and Ben Affleck, they're talking to someone, and they bring up the fact that the reviews have been really bad. Just zooms in on Ben Affleck. You see him just looking really sad. Just like slowly. I'll show it to you guys later. It's quite funny.
He's like, damn it, another superhero movie where they're ragging on me.
But yeah, in the deleted scene, they show... it's another scene of Lex in the ship. And he kind of like comes upon this chamber. And there's this weird creature in there. This weird character with this big helmet thing with these horns. And he looks like he's about 12 feet tall or something. And there's a box, a cube, that's sort of like morphing, and it's very similar to the thing we saw in the clip of Cyborg, if you remember.
Yeah, I mean, the email he got, that was amazing.
Right, and if you've seen the animated movie Justice League War, or if you started reading the New 52 stuff, and you kind of realize that Cyborg was created with, like, a mother box,
yeah,
it looks to be the same thing that this character is manipulating, mm-hmm. and a lot of people online are saying that this is General Steppenwolf from Apocalypse, one of Darkseid's generals. So, and everyone was like screaming. They're like, why didn't you leave that in? Like, it would have explained things so much better. You know, like why he knows Darkseid's coming. Because like when he makes reference to that at the end, no one knows what the hell he's talking about. Like, who's coming? What are you talking about? Like, if they left this scene in, you know, it would have offered some explanation of what he saw. You
know? So he was just hanging out in that ship the entire time?
He was somehow in this chamber, and he was, like, manipulating these parts and doing something. And maybe he wasn't physically in the ship. Maybe Lex was just seeing him sort of like a holo projection in the things that he was learning from, you know, the AI. But I think they should have left it in, to be honest. If you see it, you could kind of comment on it, whether you agree or not. But it was interesting, definitely. But.
A big worry going into this was, like, they're going to put all these characters in this movie, and then we kind of saw how they did that. What did you think of that moment? Of the email with all the little scenes?
That was, like, the most giant shoehorn that I've ever seen used to just kind of pry things into a tight spot. Yeah, it was awful. I wish they would have just left it out, to be honest, because, like, they even... I mean, Bruce makes a comment at the end at the funeral to Wonder Woman where he says, we need to find the others like you. Maybe they could have just kept it at that. Where they say, like, you know, I've been hearing about others like you. We need to find them or something. Like, that whole email just felt completely forced. And especially, we talked about the Cyborg one. Like, what the hell was happening there? Like, there's shit floating in the air and, like, bonding to his body, like... No one knows what that is, okay? Like, no one, like, the average person doesn't know what's happening there. And they're like, who the hell is that guy? And I don't feel like it's a good, like, you know, there are good ways to sort of stir up questions in people and make them intrigued to want to see more. But then there's a bad where you take it too far and they just become completely confused and disoriented because there's so many things like that.
I mean, see, like... Then there's also the Aquaman scene where he's just kind of staring into camera awkwardly and then all of a sudden pokes his trident.
Which feels like forever. It's like, eyes adjusting? Is like, what's going on?
I feel like that was just to get like there was a, in the contract, Jason Momoa, it was like, I need at least 11 seconds of screen time. And like, that's how they had to get it. So.
Need to go. And what's kind of funny though, it's like, I'm going to have these files on my computer and all these videos and make sure that before I do that, I'm also going to create cool symbols for each one of them.
Right, exactly.
And save them on my computer that way because that makes...
Why was Wonder Woman, why did she have a WW? Did someone already name her that? Like, why? What is... I don't get that.
I can understand, like, the star, but yeah, it's like...
Nah. Yeah, and Cyborg had a C.
Yeah.
It's like, why would you... You're going to give them... Why not just go by their names? Like, why give them symbols?
Why, I guess someone named Aquaman, apparently, because that was the A symbol that he has on his belt or whatever. But, I mean, Flash is an obvious one with the lightning bolt. But.
And also, Flash was kind of weird looking. Is Flash in this movie supposed to be, like, Mexican with facial hair? Because that's kind of what he looked like. Because there was somebody coming out during one of Batman's dreams. Was that supposed to be Flash as well?
That's what I wondered.
I believe it's supposed to be Flash. It seems like he is also like some Flash from the future in the sense that like he's like a helmet almost.
And yeah, it was like an armor almost.
And like with a more of a tech look to him and kept talking about Lois Lane and he'd always been right about him.
Yeah, like he was saying Lois Lane is the key. You were right about him. You've always been right about him. And then they never went back to that for the rest of the movie. They never touched on it.
Yeah.
And it's like...
Was that the dream within the dream you're talking about?
Yeah. It's like he wakes up and sees that. And I'm like, oh, cool. The Flash is trying to time travel to warn him about something.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's actually really cool. This movie could turn out really well. And they never went back to that. And infuriatingly, they show him wake up again. I'm like, damn it! Like, it didn't really even happen. I'm like, what the hell?
And did it happen? Or did, like, I guess that's the question. Like, did it? It seemed like it would have to have happened because at that point,
but why wasn't he affected by it? He didn't like. He didn't react to that dream at all.
I don't understand.
He didn't. He didn't ponder it and say, was that a warning from the future? You know, why is Lois Lane the key? Who is Lois Lane?
Unless that's kind of when it gets to the end, when he asks, which he asks them why he feels like they need a team. That's why he thinks he feels they need a team, because of that warning he got. Though he doesn't seem all that concerned with going after Lois Lane.
But what, right. But what about the other dreams where, and that's where I was very confused during this whole thing too. Like, are these just haunting dreams that he's having? Or is he actually having premonitions?
Yeah.
Because why are we seeing parademons? Why are we seeing a gigantic Omega symbol in the sand in the desert? Like, are these premonitions he's having? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Why would he be dreaming these things if he hasn't seen anything like that?
And I think, again, that goes back to probably something in the future where they're, you know, they're piping in premonitions to him somehow. I don't know.
Maybe. Like, it would make more sense for Lex Luthor to be having those dreams because of the things that he saw on the ship.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They should have had him sort of get knocked out or something from the influx of information into his brain. And, like, while he's laying there, he's sort of having these premonitions where he can see things. That would have made so much more sense to me.
Because I guess the thing with the visions, you had the one, and then you had the one with him floating with bats around him up in the, which I guess was a vision.
Yeah. The worst one I hated the most was when he was at the mausoleum and the blood was coming out of the thing of his mother's tomb. And then this giant, freaky, like, ghoulish bat came out and bit him on the neck. And
is that supposed to be Man-Bat?
No, it just was just unnecessary to me. I'm like, what does that prove? Like, I don't know.
There were little things I did like what they did in the sense of setting things up. Like, with Wayne Manor being burnt to the crisp or with, like, the spray paint on the Robin suit. Like that, because it doesn't necessarily pertain to what's going on right now, so it's not affecting the actions in the movie, so I think that's okay, and it kind of gets into the psyche of why Batman is the way he is. Like, that stuff I felt was fine, but yeah, the email thing, which was so ridiculous. Like, there are so many things with that that seem ridiculous. A, Batman's very trusting of her already, which is interesting, and the simple thing I just thought was really funny. And it's so, like, I'm going to check my email and watch these video YouTube clips, which, and two, I guess, one of my issues with the entire logic of the movie is that, so, Jesse Eisenberg, or, sorry, Lex Luthor wants, I guess he wants Superman dead, but he also wants Batman dead, or he wants Batman to do it, in the sense, like, the whole thing with the kryptonite, like, it's so strange to me, like, everything around it. If you look at the logic of it, so Lex Luthor is bringing it in to try to kill Superman, but he also knows Batman wants to kill Superman, so it seems like he, in a way, wants Batman to also take it and to help him find out ways to kill Superman.
I think that whole thing, he was setting up Batman, because, like he said, he sent those checks where he wrote with the red crayon and everything, and if I could pat myself on the back a little bit, when the trailer came out, we talked about that meeting where Lex walks up to the two of them and he says, Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent meeting. And, you know, he shakes Clark's hand and he's like, wow, that is a firm grip. You should not pick a fight with this guy. And he's looking at Bruce. And I think I mentioned at that time, it appears like he already knows both of their identities.
Yeah.
Like, before the movie even takes place, he knows all this.
Yeah.
And it seemed like that was the case because he was pulling the strings the entire time, which was kind of cool. Like, that was a neat way to sort of do it, but I don't know.
If you don't know why he's pulling the strings. Or
right. Like, what is his motivation for doing that? Like, I don't really know. Like, and it doesn't make sense to me for him to unleash Doomsday.
Because, like, he doesn't know what he can... Because Doomsday could have easily just killed him.
Right.
Which he tried to do, but Superman jumped in the way.
Yeah.
Which then also leads to... Chuck, I know you talked to me before about... also set up this whole thing of Zack Snyder not knowing Superman's powers
Let's get into that a little bit. I got some things to say about that. To me, it seemed like they were extremely inconsistent throughout the movie. I know it might be a bold statement, but it just seems to me like Zack Snyder has a lack of understanding of
Superman. Stop right there. Sorry.
That is a complete sentence. You say no more. It seems like he has a lack of understanding of not only Superman's character, but also his complete power set. The one that aggravated me the most, I think, was when they had the Senate hearing, when he had the little trial with the senator from Kentucky there, and he came in and stood at the little podium, and you had the guy that used to work for Bruce Wayne in the hover round that Lex Luthor gave him. And this scene really bothered me in particular because this explosion goes off, right? And everyone in the room is just pretty much vaporized and killed instantly. But to me, like, Superman's reaction time and his speed are extremely, extremely fast, right? So they're almost as fast as the Flash. Not quite. But to me, Superman could have contained this explosion. He would have heard the click of the thing starting to go off. And I know he said he wasn't looking and he kind of got caught off guard. But, I mean, he hears Lois pounding on the concrete under the water in the middle of a fight. So he's in a court hearing and he can't hear the click of a bomb. And within, you know, tens of thousands of a second, he could have, like, basically moved over there. He could have used super breath to blow the explosion out through the wall, minimize the casualties. There's any number of things he could have done. I mean, he could have.
It just goes to show you how quiet those hover rounds are.
you really don't know they're there. I mean, he could have grabbed that and flew it out through the wall as it was exploding, and, you know, maybe two people die instead of, you know, 50 or 60, whatever. It just seemed like sort of a lack of understanding there of his power set. Like, he could have definitely contained that to some degree based on everything we've read and everything we've seen in animated series and even other fights, like the Batman scene, the fight with Batman. I mean, obviously he's under a little bit of an influence of the kryptonite gas, but we see him sort of recover from that. Mm-hmm. And you see Bruce basically punching him, and then all of a sudden, like, his face becomes rigid and he's just not moving at all when he's hitting him. And it's like, okay, he has all of his strength back. And as we've seen him do so many times with, like, Lex Luthor's power suit in the comics or in the cartoons, where he could grab his suit and just rip it off of him and it's game over. Like, all his trinkets are gone, all of his little toys. But he really looks like he's holding back. Like, he's almost letting Batman beat him for some reason. Like, it just seems inconsistent throughout the fight. And even to the point where Batman has him beat, he has his foot on his throat, he's got the kryptonite spear ready to stab him. By this time, should have recovered again from the kryptonite gas. So you realize the spear is probably severely weakening him since he's holding it that close. But just a little bit later in the movie, picks up the spear and flies, you know, almost full speed into Doomsday, like, with incredible force. So, I mean, I know they're trying to show him, like, you know, sort of indomitable will where he's, like, really pushing forward, but it just seemed, like, really inconsistent, and it was just seemed, like, kind of forced so that it could make Batman look like he had a chance. And, like,
and toss the spear to Wonder Woman.
Right, and, like, you have another character that can fly and jump ridiculously far. Like, I don't know. It just seemed really inconsistent. And
well, and even, like, the reasoning behind him having to, like, to save his mother. But it feels like he should have been able just to find her and say, like, without Batman's help.
Yeah. Right.
Like, he can, where Lois was in Africa, and he came and saved her, nearly immediately.
Yeah.
But, like, his...
Like, his mother could have, like, literally whispered, like, Clark, I'm here. And, like, he would have, like, flown to her and know where she was. Mm-hmm. Like, but that, you bring up a good point with his mother, because that's where I saw a fault in Batman's motivation somewhat, because like you look at how he's hated Superman for, what was it, like 18 months, I think this takes place after. He's hated Superman for 18 months. He wants to hunt him down. He even makes the comment about his ancestors being hunters. You know, he just wants to find this guy and end it and kill him. And he finally gets him pinned down and has him right where he wants him to finish him off. And just because he finds out that his mother was kidnapped, he abandons that plan.
Yeah.
That makes no sense to me whatsoever.
To be fair, they had the same name. Right. But also, who says that? The way he even says it, Superman, he's like, you go kill Martha.
It was like a nervous tick. Whoa. He was like, why did you say that name? Like, freaking out. Like.
Yeah. But also, who says that? When, like, why not say, my mom is in trouble? Why say, it did seem like that itself, that's a nitpick.
Right, it is, but...
But no, yeah, that does seem like... Wait, your mom's also named Martha?
Did we Dude!
Did we just become best friends? I think we just became best friends.
It's like the Step Brothers movie. Yeah. It's like, you don't touch my drum set. Like,
my brother said every mother should now be named Martha so we could have world peace.
That is true. That's where his logic kind of goes out there.
And people like... People make fun of, like, Superman because, like, oh, his weakness is a rock. Well, Batman's weakness is the word Martha, okay? Because he abandoned his entire plan because Clark said his mother was in danger.
And then at the end, like, he gives that speech, like, oh, I failed him. It's like, what do you mean? It just seems like you guys are best friends forever, and suddenly it's like, oh,
yeah,
what did you fail him? That was super questionable. But I guess it's funny we even talk about it yet. Though it's obviously that it's not really the death of Superman, but were you surprised that they actually did kill Superman?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised about that.
I wasn't. I was more surprised on how they killed him.
Yeah.
Because Doomsday shouldn't have had his arm cut off by Wonder Woman's sword.
Yeah.
So if she can cut off his hand, why can't she just stab him in the heart and we'd be all over this thing and don't need the spear to begin with?
Or cut off his head. You could, yeah.
Yeah.
I was talking to some people that didn't really know anything about the comics, and they said that part angered them because they're like, why? They used all this heavy artillery. Nothing could puncture his skin.
Mm-hmm.
And Wonder Woman just like, swing, and cuts his entire hand off, which is like 4 feet thick. Like,
yeah.
Like, how do you make that jump? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, and then he gets stabbed by the bone that's still coming through on Doomsday. So that was a little weird for me.
The one thing didn't
surprise me though.
I actually like. Maybe I could add this to the things that I liked about it. I liked that they explored the death of Superman thing.
Yeah,
and I hope they continue that into a next film where they explore some issues of like World Without a Superman, like that whole story that came out in the 90s. But like. What aggravated me sort of was like the reason he was able to, like, he sort of went into his little Kryptonian coma in the comics where he's wearing the recovery suit. Like, the whole thing behind that was he's wearing the black recovery suit to help him absorb more solar radiation and disperse it evenly over his body to heal him. And it's like they're showing him burying him. He has no exposure to the sunlight at all. Like, how is he going to heal from this? Like, I don't understand. Yeah. Like, I mean, they show him healing from the nuclear blast in outer space, which shouldn't even have scratched him, by the way, which is another inconsistency.
But it is kind of funny. He can survive a nuclear blast, but the bone thing is going right through him.
Right, exactly. Like, I don't know. But, yeah, I don't feel like that was very consistent either.
That, I mean, I was surprised they actually did kill him in the sense of, like, I was waiting for the moment to come up where, and it kind of does, where you see, like, the dust rising up in the air that he's not really dead, but I was like, wow, they're really going for this, aren't they? That was a little bit surprising. I thought, like, when you see him bring out the newspaper, I thought it was going to be, like, Superman Lives or something. Was that in Superman Returns?
Yeah.
They show the paper.
I think they had two different papers,
yeah,
didn't they?
Yeah.
And they were, like, weren't sure which one to print or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know if there's anything else specifically spoiler-wise you wanted to bring up.
I wanted to bring up just two more things, one positive and one negative. This is my final positive thing that I liked about the movie, and that was Alfred. I thought I actually liked his character a lot. I thought he was one of the few guys that actually had his shit together and had his head on straight. I thought he was a positive influence on Bruce, even though Bruce didn't listen to him as much as he should have. But mm-hmm. Alfred was sort of a wise, you know, sort of the wise ancient one, so to speak, where like he knew Bruce was going down this path of obsession. He was trying to talk him out of it and everything. And since when did Alfred become such a techie? Like, he was like helping build the suit. But I mean, I really don't care about that. But I did like his character. I like him throughout the movie in the different scenes.
Plus, Jeremy Irons is always great in everything he does.
Yeah, he was good. So I liked that a lot. The other thing I would mention, this is a nitpicky thing, but it's just something that kind of bugged me. And I mentioned this to Greg after the movie, but in the beginning, when Bruce Wayne goes to the party at the Luther Mansion, and he goes down the stairs, and he finds the server room, mm-hmm. okay, of Lex's, you know, top secret encrypted files with all these servers, which is in a small room across from the kitchen with glass doors that aren't locked at all.
Yeah.
I don't understand that at all. Like, that doesn't make any sense strategically.
And then wouldn't it be easier for him, for Bruce, to then dress up as a server or a waiter at this thing so he'd have easier and be closer to the server to get to it instead of...
I guess he'd probably be too... unless he had, like, some sort of makeup or something like that.
Well, we've seen him in other things doing it.
It does that. It was kind of... I'm like, they're just... It's right around the corner. All right, well...
It's like, wow, you really have no security at all, do you? Like, and it's just weird because that was something I noticed, too, with Lex. Like, it seemed like it had, like, a social network influence.
Yeah.
Because he was almost sort of a... Mark Zuckerberg type of character where he's playing basketball at work where they have this, you know, they have half a basketball court there right in the office. He has bowls of candy lying around.
Can never have a Jolly Rancher ever again.
Right. That was creepy too. When he pushed in the guy's mouth, I'm like, what the hell?
And then licks his fingers. Right, like exactly. He had a finger in that guy's mouth and he's licking it out.
And then he gave him military secrets.
Right. Yeah. But it just seemed like they were trying to make him like Mark Zuckerberg, where it's this like relaxed like atmosphere.
That would have been better because like watching Social Network, Mark Zuckerberg feels more like Lex Luthor than this Lex Luthor
right,
did.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can't think of anything else specifically spoiler wise I wanted to.
We'll probably come up with something later when we're off air.
Like I said, I did like Wonder Woman. I did like the moment of her saving Bruce. I think that like that was the closest moment of me wanting to cheer that it wasn't an entire film because it did seem like like that's kick ass with seeing her like block the blast with her, which was kind of misleading in the trailer because it wasn't her shield. She was using her wristband, which was cool. Like and they did kind of show all of her weapons. She had the lasso. She had everything. So. Like going full force with that, which I said, I'm really excited for the Wonder Woman movie. Yeah. I think that I'm actually still kind of excited for Suicide Squad because it's not Zack Snyder, but I kind of like this world. Like I don't mind that it's darker, that the tone's a little bit more mature. I'm fine with that. It makes sense because you gotta try to stand differently than Marvel. But yeah, it's so disappointing because you're looking at a movie that I remember waiting for, seeing like the little poster in I Am Legend in the background.
Yeah.
And since like thinking how cool this could have been, and it's a complete waste. Like the potential of this movie could have been, it could have been one of the best, and it's just, I don't know. I guess maybe we can end on that. Like, where would you put this in the, within, like, would you call it one of the, like, the worst failures with, like, the Spider-Man 3s and the Fantastic Fours, or...
I haven't seen the new Fantastic Four. I heard that is atrocious.
It's funny because they suffer from many similar issues where there are, like, elements that seem like they could have been great, but they just were never fully realized.
Mm. So I kind of put it down there, not seeing it, but I put it there with like Spider-Man 3, X-Men 3, all the threes, I guess. All the threes, not really though, but those two specifically. It definitely did not even get into like my mid-range favorites.
Would you put it above or below Man of Steel?
I liked Man of Steel better. It was a little bit more realized and not as sloppy, and I could figure out what was going on through the whole thing, and I wasn't as confused in that.
Yeah.
And plus, I kind of liked how I know Chuck doesn't, but I kind of like how Superman was in that movie.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have a huge problem with that. If they're going to explore that more, like, go through the conflict that Clark would have dealing with his decision. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like create some inner turmoil in him that he had to make that decision. But they never did anything.
Mm-hmm.
It was like he went and met with, you know, this is talking about the end of Man of Steel, and he met with a couple of military officials, and he's like, I'm watching you, or whatever, and it was like he was unfazed by it.
Yeah.
If you're going to make a defining moment like that, show the inner turmoil in him. Like, don't just brush it off.
Even in this, like, it does seem like he kills that guy in Africa, right? He just straight up murders him.
It's kind of seems like it, yeah. Like, he could have very easily grabbed the end of the gun and just caught the bullet. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
it does seem like that other guy just kind of gets off, like, this other CIA dude. Like, you could have saved, no, I'm just going to let him die. No.
Which, that CIA guy was supposed to be Jimmy Olsen, apparently. Yeah, that's what they were saying. I heard a lot of stuff online.
Interesting tidbit, that guy was actually on Smallville. And he played Perry White.
By the way, what year did this take place in? Because
it's 18 months after Man of Steel.
So. That, when did Man of Steel take place? Is it in modern times?
I'm pretty sure.
Why does he have a film camera? Why? And what world is it? Does this take place in our world? Because I saw Anderson Cooper, Nancy Grace.
Can we stop doing that, by the way? Well, Neil deGrasse Tyson was kind of funny, but yeah, like, that stuff needs to end.
They had Dodge Challengers too, so that must be our current time.
Yeah, so that was also weird. Like, it took me out of a different time and a different place.
Yeah.
So we're in, like,
I didn't even think that's funny. He's filming the camera. That is amazing.
Yeah, that as soon as that happened, I turned to Chuck. Yeah, that's, I'm like, so maybe it is Jimmy Olsen, since he's using film.
See, like, I wouldn't put it, like, as low as Spider-Man 3. Like, I actually ended up on Letterboxd, I made a ranking of all the DC Marvel movies, comparing them, and where I put them. And this was, like, mid. This was, like, in, like, wasn't as low as, like, the Elektra or, like, the worst of the worst. I put it around, like,
I think he had a 45th?
Something like that, so
there's a lot of comic book movies trying out to think of
around the same. I would say, like, maybe like a Batman Forever, or which is, I mean, around that, like, around the end of maybe Amazing Spider-Man, the first one, like, in a sense of there are things there that I liked, but overall, just it's really messy. So
I don't know. I'm probably gonna, this is gonna be controversial, but this is quite possibly one of the worst comic book movies I have ever seen personally. Wow. This, just as far as my enjoyment of it and my disappointment of it, I honestly saw better elements in Elektra than I saw in this. I'm not even joking. Like, maybe it's personal preference.
But hey, I at least understood their motivations in that.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, it may not have been executed the best, like, with acting, but at least you knew, you know, where they were going. But I could see, like, things like Batman Forever. That was pretty awful, too. But, I mean, I gotta rank this way, way, way down at the bottom, like, probably, like, bottom three, bottom five comic book movies I've ever seen. I was just extremely, extremely disappointed and let down after I came out of this. I mean, maybe a second watch would be a little bit better.
Do you think, an additional, like, the three-hour cut or the longer film, you might enjoy it more?
I think it's possible, because they could get a chance to flesh things out more and explain things. It could possibly be a lot better, because actually I remember watching the director's cut of the Punisher, the Tom Jane Punisher.
I like that Punisher.
And there was some, that the director's cut of that is actually really good, because there's some scenes in there that explain things that you didn't really get in the theatrical version, like how that cop sort of became corrupt and sort of ratted out Frank Castle. Like, that wasn't in the theatrical version. So there are a lot of cases where that does help when they release that version. So it's quite possible I could like it more after that.
But I would like an unedited version of no CGI.
The bathtub scene.
Yes, thank you.
Watch The Fighter, and you might enjoy that more.
Alrighty, I am Googling that. Now.
I think it's the fighter. I could be wrong, but
yeah, I'm probably down around like maybe 1.5 stars.
Well, possibly. Yeah, I gave it. I have maybe one. I have a written review on Geekcast Radio. I gave it 2.5. But yeah, I can't fault. What's interesting too is the reaction to this film. Like, I heard a lot of people say, I don't know if we have enough time now, but like, people saying, "Well, this is for the fans," and like, I don't get that at all because no. I don't see what in this like the fans would. What in, are they pointing to? Saying, "See, this is what the critics don't like, but this is what the fans do like." Because I'm a fan, I'm a comic book fan, and I like good stories, and this isn't it. So I don't know if that's people just because of it's a comic book movie, so they want to like it. I'm not saying you can't get enjoyment out of this. There's people probably who do like it, but I guess I see that reaction a ton, where people saying, "Well, it's not made for the critics; it's made for the fans." But I don't understand that because the failures of this are just failures that are universal, it's not because it's not trying to do amazing things, or it's not like the serious Oscar contender. It's just poorly made.
And I'll say, like, there is a distinction between like. If you don't agree with us the way these characters were portrayed, that's fine. But there's hard evidence of things that happened in this movie that were terribly executed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that has nothing to do with character portrayal. So, like, you can't ignore those things like that we've talked about.
There are, like, major objective problems that you can point, like we said. Like, the motivations is the key. Like, that is unquestionably a problem with this. I mean, maybe you can oversee that. Maybe you're like, okay, I don't care about that. I just want to see these guys fighting. But like I said, I was let down in the fight to begin with. Like, the action itself just seemed, minus the warehouse escape. I really like that sequence, but besides that, the action to me was just rather forgettable. So, all right. Anything else before we bring this episode to a close?
Please, Civil War, get here as soon as possible.
Gonna watch Daredevil again, then watch the taste out of our mouth.
Right. Oh, season 2, you mean, not the Ben Affleck Daredevil?
Yeah, season 2, sorry.
Still better than this.
Yeah. It's funny, someone made a joke saying, like, on Twitter, in Daredevil, you see a much more moral question regarding morality in the Season 2 of Daredevil Episode 3 with Punisher and Deadpool. Not sorry, with Punisher and Daredevil. I'm like, you see a better argument regarding morality of being a superhero between Colossus and Deadpool and Deadpool in this. So,
yeah, that's pretty sad.
But, yeah. All right. So, be curious to hear what everyone else has to say regarding this film. You can let us know what you think in a number of different ways. We're on Facebook and Twitter. Just search Talking in Circles, GCRN. You can also email us at feedback@geekcast3.com or talkinginCircles@live.com. You guys are also on Twitter. What are your Twitter names?
I am at HeroicAgeChuck.
And I am at TheCreateForge.
And I am at MovieRevolt. But that'll be it for this week. We'll be back next week. Same time, same channel, same podcast feed. But for now,
this has been Chuck.
This has been Greg, or Mexican Flash.
And this has been Dan. And we've been Talking in Circles. We'll see you next week.
Andale, andale. Yes, we have Speedy Gonzales.
So that's Donald Trump's worst nightmare. You're going to get right over that wall. So
just run right up the wall and right over.
Do a time portal and everything. I don't know what ethnicity Ezra Miller is, but yeah, I like him as an actor, so I'm curious to see what.
I don't understand the facial hair.
Yeah. Do you think they could have gotten someone better than Ezra? Sorry, that was terrible.
Yeah, well, in this world, no one shaves, apparently. Everyone has a 5 o'clock shadow.
Right.
So.
What does Superman use to shave? Does he use the heat vision in a mirror?
Well, that was a whole marketing campaign with Man of Steel, remember?
Yeah, with Gillette, and they had... Yeah.